Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello, Inside Lacrosse Podcast listeners. We have a special one for you today. Join alongside Alyssa Murray Cometti, Nile Womans, Emily Considine. How we doing? And we're here to talk about some Isle Women top 50 players. So very exciting times as we're under 20 days, as approaching the 2025 season. How are we doing and how excited are we?
Good. I don't know how we got here so fast, but we're here. I feel like it was the Final Four not too long ago, but I say that every year.
Yeah, agreed. Things are flying by right now.
Flying by, indeed. And we have plenty to get through, so let's get right to it. First off, just going into the process of the Isle Women top 50 players ahead of the top or the 2025 season. These lists were put together during the fall as a look ahead to kind of drum up some excitement for the upcoming season. Like the men's list, the challenges were steep as the amount of graduated talent was pretty insane this year. You think of the top two players standing out from last year, Izzy Skein and Aaron Kuykendall from Northwestern, both graduating to headline just a loaded class from that 2024 epic season. Tell me about some of the, Alyssa, we'll start with you, the challenges and the difficulties in kind of compiling a list of this magnitude. Of course, to set the stage, this list used to be the combined men's and women's for Inside Lacrosse. A few years back, we switched it up and did two separate lists for men's and women. And I think it's great because highlighting more players, highlighting all the skill that this game has to offer. But again, there's always going to be some of those players that get left out.
Sure. I think, obviously I agree. I think the 50 women and 50 men individually being recognized is awesome. This year in particular, like you said, on the men's side, it's similar with the women. You know, the returners, like the fifth years are primarily transfers from the Ivy League, which, you know, you just never know how it's going to pan out with the transfer. It could be amazing, or they could just be like a role player somewhere else and you just won't know, because it just doesn't mean that they're any less talented. It's just that they have had less time jiving with a certain group than they did prior to that. So there's just so much unknown. There's younger players that have had less experience playing, but also just, you know, have been waiting. So they might just pop off as soon as the season starts. We just don't know. And then, you know, a bunch of teams with tons of injuries. You know, we talked about North Carolina last year, who was super young. Like, they didn't have many fifth years at all. But they lost like 9 starters over the course of the year. So it's just like, you don't know what's going to happen. So there's just a lot of unknown, but it was a good exercise, and I'm sure we're going to get some wrong, and I think we'll get some right. Kind of how it always goes, and I'm excited to see how it pans out, and we'll see.
We'll see, indeed. That's what the first couple of weeks of the season are always so fun to learn about the new lineups, the kind of the breakthrough players, like you mentioned. And Emily, this one for you, just not this exercise is a college one, right? So not totally kind of encompassing international competition. But this offseason was unique in that we did get to see these players at the world stage competing for Team USA and other international teams at the U20 World Championship over there in Hong Kong. One, how cool is that to see these some of these teammates join together? And also, how helpful was that just to watch kind of in tear up how talented some of these players will be and are for their respective programs coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's always cool to see, you know, a little mix up of players that, you know, some of them are have been in college and, you know, gaining a lot of experience, and then some haven't even had a college season yet. So it was kind of cool to see them all jive together. But I think what that really proved to us, at least for the U.S. team, that Madison Taylor is completely dominant. She had an excellent tournament, and I think that really solidified her for the number one spot. And it's cool to see her. You know, she was never really a role player. She stepped on the field her freshman year and really exploded. But she did play, you know, a little bit of a second fiddle to Quickendall and Skane. And second fiddle is such a loose term because she still had, you know, a phenomenal career alongside them. But it's going to be cool to see her, you know, play as that lead role now.
Yeah, like, I think that was one of the hardest decisions when you two and the rest of the staff and others were putting together the All-Americans last year, right? Like, who should we put alongside Izzy Skane in that first team? And I think you ended up going with Madison Taylor, and Quickendall slipped down to the second team. That's not just how loaded that Wildcats team was. But yeah, you stole the question right out of my mind here. Was there ever any discussion of, is anyone going to challenge Madison Taylor for that number one spot? And I know just the talent around the women's game is definitely there, but was that just the biggest clear choice of this exercise?
I think to start the season, there's no argument that Taylor is the top. Not to take anything away from Chase Boyle, I think she's outstanding, but just the body of work that Taylor's put together in her first 2 years with Northwestern, and obviously, you know, she's playing alongside one of the best players to ever play, and then another great in Quickendall. So it's not like she's out there alone, but just how far they've gotten and how well she's played on the biggest stage is a testament to how talented she is. Obviously, I think the biggest question is going to be, you know, now that every team is going to be focusing on how to stop Madison Taylor versus how do we stop this three-headed monster? And then, you know, all the other talent that came with the Northwestern team in the last 2 years. I think that is the question that everyone will be asking. But like we said, with transfers that are big question marks, like you have Nikki Miles coming in for Northwestern, Jalen Rosga too from Maryland, who has kind of come in under the radar, had some injuries early on, coming in the midfield. It's just, there's so much we don't know. So it might start out with how do we stop Madison Taylor, but then if they do well, then that might free some opportunity up for her as well.
And just all around wise, what makes her so elite in so many different ways? What are some of her biggest strengths in style of play?
Yeah, I think that she's just so powerful. She's, you know, her snap of her wrist for her shots is unbelievable. It looks like she's not even shooting that hard, and then the ball's already in the back of the net. Her footwork is elite. You know, she can really move in a box, but she can also dodge really wide. She has great speed. She's kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to the attacking end. Something that I love seeing her, she rides so hard, sometimes over the restraining line, and ends up playing some defense. And I'm sure that's, you know, a tactic that Northwestern really plays into, using their players' athletic ability to kind of dominate the entire field end to end. But she is just an elite athlete that, you know, she probably could play any other sport and be just as good at it, because she just has, you know, the physique and the mindset that is going to make her, you know, the best of the best.
Yeah, I think when you see her playing out there, it's like, there's no moment too big. She's always got a smile on her face playing, and just the ability to like stay loose in the biggest moments like that in big games is so critical for someone like her, and playing at a school like Northwestern that is often in really big and important games, which I think is why they see her stepping up when they need it the most. And, you know, you look at her shooting percentage, her shot selection, you know, she does so many things well, but all at the same time, I wouldn't call her like a super flashy player. Like, she's not throwing like crazy trick shots often, but she scores so many, like the percentage of her shooting is just outrageous. And that's with multiple defenders on her. You know, it's not, they're not gimme goals. She's creating opportunities for herself and finishing on them. So I think that's just part of what makes her so lethal.
Yeah. And I think going back to a little bit what you said, Alyssa, about the smile on her face, you know, when she scores a goal, she's jumping as high as she can in the air. And there's so much excitement behind her play. I also think she has a really great, like, short memory. So when she makes a mistake, you know, the next play is happening, it's almost like that last mistake didn't even happen. Although she rarely does make mistakes. But, you know, it's just that hunter mentality where it's like, I'm going to get the next one. She does a really great job of bouncing back.
100%. And she's tasted the very top, right? She's been to back-to-back national championship games. She's tasted the title, the silverware her first season, right? And then I think what's scary is she's coming off a heartbreaking loss, and she's going to have a big chip on her shoulder like the rest of the Wildcats will. So it's going to be really, really entertaining to watch her coming in her own as that number one option this 25 season. Before I do want to talk about the rest of the top 10, especially the top 20 of this list. I think these elite players are just so fun to talk about. But before we get there, let's backtrack, give some love to a couple players lower in the list that maybe first off, were there any snubs or omissions that were really tough to leave off the top 50 altogether? And maybe one or two players that in your mind could have been higher on this list that maybe we could be seeing more from this upcoming season?
It's hard to say if someone's been left off. I mean, I know for a fact there's going to be people that I'm like, oh, well, they were left off. It's so hard to, you know, once you get, I think usually, and this is how rankings go, no matter what your ranking, I feel like the first 20 is easy. And then beyond that is like where things get a little muddy. And you can kind of just go several different directions with it. But I think on this list, when I look at the list of players, those UVA young players could really pop, like come into their own. And they were kind of hard to place. I think UVA is going to be very good. I think they're going to have another strong year and build upon the success of the new staff that they brought in 2024. But just based off of them, their output in their freshman season, it's just so hard to guess like where they're going to go from there, especially with they graduated a good amount of talent. So you just don't know. I mean, those DiNardo and Gallica, and Madison Alemo is another one. So maybe she'll be the snub for UVA. But, you know, I think there's a handful there that could really have great sophomore years that were just, it's a question mark.
Yeah, there is one that didn't make the list, Jordan Dean. I thought she, you know, she did have a phenomenal junior year. She led the NCAA with 261 draw controls and a single season record. So about 14 draw controls per game, which is really impressive. So, I mean, her and Chase Boyle really did a nice job with the draw controls. Hopefully she can replicate this year, and I'm sure she's looking at the list, saying that she should be on it and going to make a statement, which that's something that we would love to see.
110%. And you mentioned Chase Boyle there, the Iowa woman, number two player heading into the 2025 season. We talked pre-pod here of just her stats really just jump off the page of how incredible they are. What are some of her biggest strengths and just, well, what can we expect coming into this season from her?
I mean, winning the draw to start, I think, like, Loyola just manages to have so many players that come in and just dominate at that position. Dana Dobie is just so talented in teaching that skill and having her players perfect it. She came in after Libby Rosenzweig graduated and just took over. And so I think that obviously helps Loyola, makes it really hard for them to be stopped. But then offensively, I think she has great lacrosse IQ. And she's going to be able to, she is able to beat you off the dodge, but she also really works well with her teammates off ball. And, you know, I think Georgia Latch coming back on attack will be helpful for her. They will miss Sydney Black, which was another big threat for them. But yeah, I think that she's just a multi, you know, she's got multiple tools in her toolkit to beat you. And with some really great coaches of helping her understand where her opportunities lie on offense. And then obviously she's a two-way midfielder. She's not a scrub on defense either.
I think something that kind of sets her apart in the draw taking category is not only can she win it, but she can also win it and then push the fast break immediately. So she's super, what's the word? She's super, you know, versatile in that she can push the fast break, and then, you know, Loyola's offense is so fluid and a lot of assists, a lot of passing. So it's one thing to be able to win the ball for your team, but then it's another thing to be able to create an offense from it also.
Just from primarily as a men's lacrosse watcher, just the all-around athleticism of some of these two-way midfielders is just so insane to me. Just the obviously bigger field, different rules, more finesse of a game, but the fact that like the number of things that you mentioned in Boyle's game, she gets it done on both ends, right? And some of these other middies in the top 20 come to mind that really rings true, just from an outsider's perspective. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, just Fallon Vaughn from Yale, Bridget Duffy at just outside the top 10 at 13 for Army. Is she more of a scorer? She more of a two-way as well?
She's two-way.
Yeah.
Two-sport athlete. Duffy's out, like, insane. Yeah, Fallon Vaughn, I think, is another, like, she's a huge player for Yale. It was such a bummer. Their Elite Eight game against Syracuse, she got double yellowed pretty early, which hurt them.
Right.
I would have loved to see her play the full game and just see how that panned out for Yale. But yeah, I think that's something as a player that like haunts you, and you're just going to come back the next season like, I'm going to make this right. So it'll be interesting to see how she does, she responds to that. You know, Fallon Vaughn, 32 goals, 23 assists, 33 ground balls, and 53 draw controls, and 63 career caused turnovers is not too shabby. So just to be like in every, aside from making saves, it's like you're impacting every part of the game is pretty impressive. But yeah, I mean, to be a two-way midfielder in today's game with the shot clock, with the speed of the game, where it is just, you know, really, really elite level athletes.
Corey Edmondson, another the shout out inside that top 20, sitting there at 17. Now, we've gone almost 20 minutes of this podcast, and we haven't mentioned the national champions, the reigning Boston College Eagles here. Three players inside the top 20, five inside the top 20. Three inside the top 10 here, starting with, let's go with Rachel Clark. The transfer from last year comes in and has the immediate impact for Boston College down at attack.
Yeah, I think Rachel is just a really smart, very fluid player. She's so smooth when you watch her play. Her dodges, she's very slippery. She can get through as many defenders as she as they put up against her. But at the same time, she's also a heads up dodger. So the second the slide does come, she's looking for the pass. So she makes, you know, the offense around her look really good in addition to being a major threat. And, you know, just to keep going, you know, Emma Lapinto and McKenna Davis being on that, you know, unit with her. I think, you know, they're all very, very diverse, very crafty, very smart attackers that can really play off each other very well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that they're, as a unit, they're just like, they complement each other perfectly. You know, McKenna Davis is such a great feeder, and works really well with Rachel Clark kind of on that same side there. And then Emma Pinto on the low right crease most times. It just provides balance. It's part of why Northwestern was so lethal offensively the previous 2 years, is with Kuykendall and Skane on one side and Taylor on the opposite. It's like anytime a defense shifts, it's like you've got this huge player on the opposite side that's like just chomping at the bit, like waiting for the ball to come to them and just take advantage right away. So I think that's part of what makes them so hard to stop. And you know, Clark specifically is a really, really high level shooter. I think she's proven that from her time at UVA, freshman, sophomore year. I think she led her team in goals and probably points, and then to come in and make an impact like that right away. McKenna Davis is already like the program leader in assists going into her senior year, which is not too shabby. And then Emma Pinto, just like a steady force, who I think is another player from May on, you know, through the U20 tournament, just gained a lot of confidence and ended up playing some of her best lacrosse during the tournament, NCAA tournament, and then carried that through Hong Kong and then heading into the season. So it'll be interesting to see how the three of them jive.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back to what we were saying earlier about transfers, clearly Boston College took a look at what they needed in their offense and hand-selected what they thought the puzzle pieces were to fit together, and did a really nice job, you know, finding people that would connect really quickly. I think it's going to be really cool to see Mia Moscone and her ability to fit within that, you know, attacking unit with the departure of Kayla Martello. And I think it's going to be nice to have, you know, Lapinto and Clark kind of be that helping hand for her as a transfer. And I think that's going to make the transition both on and off the field a little bit more seamless, having two teammates that had already, you know, transferred and fit like a glove into a system.
Yeah, Mascon coming over from Brown, I believe, and Lapinto coming over from Florida the season before, as well as Clark. She was Virginia Tech, right?
Virginia. Yeah.
My apologies, Captain. But yeah, like you said, like Acacia just handpicks these perfect fits into the offense. And I think Instagram followers, shout out if you're following along for the countdown with some of these top 20 players as we get closer to the season. But I think a lot of them are familiar with Lapinto. With she just has all these highlight reel goals all the time. And but my favorite player, like you mentioned, Davis, just watching her dissect defenses and just throw these high level skips, it's no wonder she's already at the top of the program leader chart of assist. She's so fun to watch of how she can facilitate that offense, and I'm looking forward to watching that again. But the one player we haven't met, so of course Shea Baker and her defensive ability at 20, a well deserved nod there. But Shea Dolce, just a fan favorite because of the most viral part of that 24 season, that game title clinching save. A few words on her big game ability, but also just her all around goalie play and what makes her a top 10 player as well.
Yeah, I think Dolce, the save, is obviously what everyone thinks of at this point. Just an unbelievable performance. Like, I can't even, just unbelievable, especially like, you know, it's such a mental position, and to go down as much as Boston College was down, and then to just start chipping away and being a big part of that comeback, and then the reason ultimately that they won, is so huge for a goalie's confidence. But I think she overall, she's a steady, outstanding goalkeeper. And, you know, I think it's tough because with the ACC being so talented, you know, you're going to have these elite shooters. So your shooting percentage may not look as great as someone in another conference that, whose offensive players aren't quite as dynamic, or just there might be one or two players versus seven players on the field on offense every possession that can really find the back of the net. You know, obviously the Big Ten, there's tons of talent out there, but it's widely regarded that the ACC, the top of the ACC, is some of the best players. It's a reason why that we see these teams so highly ranked and often in the Final Four. So I think, you know, that your save percentage may not look like the season that you're actually having. And I think this past year was a perfect example of that with Shea Dolce. It's like, you know, Boston College was a highly ranked team for majority of the season. I think they had a lost to Notre Dame or and Northwestern early on, maybe mixing seasons, but whatever, they had a couple of losses early on that had people questioning. But, you know, we always say it's like Boston College always figures it out, and every individual player always figures it out by the end of the year, and Dolce is no different. And I think she's just an anchor that they've been able to rely on, and she's only just a sophomore last year. She's going into her junior year. So this is where you would start to imagine that veteran status would start kicking in and the experience would start kicking in, which will only help her confidence. I mean, she's really lived up to the hype.
Yeah, that photo of her tweeted out at halftime.
Oh, my gosh. Unreal.
And the Tom Brady, the memes were real. The Boston flavor, of course. But one spot above her, Erin O'Grady. Got to give her some love as well. The Michigan Wolverines cover story of our Face Off yearbook. Shout out Alyssa for writing that. And make sure you get yours today. Plug, plug, plug. But I think the national leader, right, of all goaltenders and save percentage last season, just how well-rounded is she? And like you mentioned, it's such a mental game in there that you got, like, there is precedent between the women's game and the men's. Like, a woman's goalie has won the Thornton before, right, with Megan Taylor, right?
Mm-hmm. From Maryland. Yeah. Sorry, Emily, I'll take this one and then I'll let you go. I feel like I've been goalieing it up. But yeah, O'Grady's outstanding too. And I think, you know, where she wasn't the starter, losing track of the years in 2023, 2024 was her first season starting. And, you know, talking with her, she's credits their win against Denver. It was one of their early games, maybe second or third game of the season. And she had something like, she had double digit saves, I'm pretty sure. And they held Denver to really low scoring. She credited that as like what got her started. And I think that's sometimes all you need as a goalie, like, okay, I'm here. I've got this. Like, you have that confidence. And so you can just approach it, practice and games differently, especially as someone who just won the spot, someone who won the starting spot for the first time in your career. You know, maybe, I'm saying this, she didn't say it, maybe there's a little imposter syndrome of like, you know, you just don't know like what's going through your head. But she's certainly not anymore. I mean, gosh, 1 year as a starter and the National Goalkeeper of the Year, with Michigan returning as much talent as they are, you know, on both ends of the field, they'll miss Maddie Burns defensively and a handful of others in the midfield. But they return a ton of talent, which should just give her, O'Grady, that much more confidence of like, all right, year two, as the anchor, like, I've got this. And, you know, who knows if she can help her team get a Big Ten championship, get into the Final Four for the first time. I think that's building your resume big time to be up for an argument of maybe the finalist or a winner, who knows. It all kind of depends on how it shakes out, but it would be pretty cool to see. So I know that they've got big goals, and Coach Hannah Nielsen talks a lot, like has great things to say about her as a leader. So I think that's all the makings of a great candidate.
Yeah, the new normal, our headline of that face-off yearbook issue, just the breakthrough season to finally get over that hump in that second round, right? I forget how many times they had appeared in it, but finally get to the quarterfinals. And now, like you said, like the next stage is that goal to get to championship weekend to the Final Four. But the goal scorer that got them there, Jill Smith, rounding out the top five at number five. Emily, let's go to you with this one. Just what impresses you most about Jill Smith's game?
I think just the unwavering aggressiveness to get the job done. I think she's someone that just doesn't quit. You know, from the second the game starts to the game ends, she's, you know, on one just to help her team in any way she can. I think she's going to be has been and will continue to be a great leader on the offensive end. I think she's someone that's consistent and reliable. I think the team really trusts her and her coaches trust her. And she's, you know, proven that with her ability to execute over and over.
Her buzzer beater goal was one of the highlights of that season. Of course, you throw in the save. No one needs to have context of what you're talking about when you talk about Dolce's save there. That's right up there for me. Of course, you throw in McKenna Davis's third quarter buzzer beater, just twirling around like that, backhanded. But like you said, Smith really takes the game to those defenders. And we'd be remiss if we did not give the defenders some love on this podcast. The only defender included in the top five, the top 10 even, coming into this season, of course, after graduating a lot of talent, Brooklyn Walker Welsh, who did not feature, of course, in that 2024 season due to injury, came back, was a menace. If you watch the World Box Lacrosse Championships, just crushing opposing players coming her way. What makes her so impressive as a kind of a stalwart of that Tar Heel defense down there, and how important will her return be for North Carolina coming into the season two?
I mean, I'm a big Brooklyn Walker Welch fan. I think she's like, she doesn't get the credit that she deserves. At least in her previous years playing at North Carolina, you know, she was, her freshman year, she was the markup defender on Charlotte North and was one of the few defenders that made life a little bit difficult for Charlotte, you know. I think it was she drew a charge or something on her in like 2021, one of the final possessions of the game or something like that. I'm probably mixing up the games at this point. My brain is not that strong. But, you know, for a freshman to be doing that versus like a veteran, this is a fifth year going against an 18-year-old. And that was her first time on the field in a Division I game, you know, a first season. I think something about Brooklyn Walker Welch is like, she's not someone that's going to be getting like a ton of stats, but if you watch games and you can appreciate what she does, she does not lose like one-on-one battles. And so you can't look at a box score to appreciate what she does. You have to watch the game and realize that not only does she not lose battles and she might, you know, hold an attacker to one goal who's used to scoring five goals, it's that she's not even they don't even send slides to her. So that way whoever she's going up against is not even creating offense because she's just staying with them. And you can't tell that from the box score. So I think that's why we have her so high. And not to mention what she does, you know, with the box game and sixes, she's skilled enough to help in transition and to you know, put a goal in or you know, make the right play to get an assist or anything like that in the midfield to make them that much more dangerous. But yeah, I think what she does defensively is just outstanding.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing between, you know, her, Sammy White, Shea Baker, I think something fun about them is they're all challengers. So they're going to go after the ball instead of kind of sitting back and waiting for the offense to make a move. So they're kind of driving the offensive shift rather than the offense forcing the defense to shift, which puts them in a much more controllable position. And really dictates the offense a little bit more than some other teams that are playing a little bit safer.
Absolutely. And I love that explanation, that breakdown too, just because, you know, from an outsider's perspective, like it just seems so hard to play one-on-one defense in the women's game with how many fouls get called, how disciplined you have to be. It's all in the footwork and kind of, like you mentioned, just driving attackers where you want them to go. And I think Brooklyn Walker-Welsh does that better than most. And you brought up Sammy White, Ellie Holland, and another defender in our top 20, Shea Baker. What else is impressive about their games coming into this season, and particularly with White and Holland coming in from the Big Ten?
You know, I think Sammy White is she is a little bit more of a chaos maker than Brooklyn Walker-Welch is, in the sense that she's going to pick up some more cause turnovers, which might, she takes a few more risks, a little bit more risks than Brooklyn Walker-Welch as a player. She's also on the draw circle a lot of the time and creates offensive opportunities through that. Huge in transition, you know, she can make plays all over the field. She's had certainly not a defender that's not afraid to take a shot or make an offensive play. And then Ellie Holland is just, for Penn State, another steady defender, like one that they can always count on to be, you know, sending the well-timed slide, communicating with her whole defense. So, you know, I think she's really been like the anchor of their defense for the last several years, that we've become so familiar with her game and her name as just a mainstay and one of the best defenders in the Big Ten.
I really like Shea Baker in the nicest way possible. Her play is just like an annoying gnat. She can just hunt the ball down, chase it, and she really puts offensive players in a position to just not want the ball. Like, I just don't want to handle this anymore because you're so annoying and I can't get past you. I think she does a really nice job of just attacking and staying with them. And she forces up and out instead of out and down, which I think is also really interesting because you're getting them closer to the restraining line. You're getting the attackers a little bit more involved. And then obviously getting the ball towards your offense, so the fast break is a little bit quicker.
And to add on to Baker, you know, she came in as a midfielder. So with the losses that Boston College has had, it will be interesting. You know, they also had, you know, Sydney Scales graduate, Becky Browndorf. So there's losses on in both those units, but it'll be interesting to see if she bumps up to the midfield and has a little bit more presence there. But either way, I think she's a huge impact for them. She's a supreme athlete, like one of the best in Division I. So yeah, I'm interested to see how she's utilized this year.
Yeah, losing Bell Smith, tough to replace that level of production and leadership. So from a neutral perspective, would love to kind of, although defender is gonna hate me for this, but we'd love to see her bump up and see what she can impact on both ends of the field. Now, Alyssa, you're a Syracuse legend, so we gotta bring up the top 10 orange player of Olivia Adamson, the attacker, and Emily, then we'll finish off with you. I want you to think of a player in the top 20 or top 50 that you want to single out and sing some praise towards. But Alyssa, start with with Olivia Adamson's game and what makes her such an elite player.
I mean, Adamson, she's proven herself year after year. I think going into her senior year now, she's got a lot of attention on her, having Syracuse just graduated tons of talent. You know, 2 years ago, it was Meg Carney and Megan Tyrell. This year, it's Emma last year, it's Emma Tyrell, among many others for the Syracuse roster that have graduated. But, you know, something with Adamson is that she's found a way to make an impact every year, no matter the capacity. No matter what they needed. You know, 2 years ago, it was taking the draw after Kate Mishewski got injured, and she learned it and did it well, along with playing offense and, you know, putting in a bunch of goals. Last year, you know, she just was one of the leading goal scorers and targets and scores big goals in big moments as well. So I think she just has a great lacrosse IQ. She's been training with the U.S. national team as well, and has had that opportunity. So I think that always helps your confidence, and also to pick some things up along the way of how do you improve after competing with some of the best in the world, or the best in the world if you're looking at the history of the World Cup. yeah, I think she's outstanding, and I think she's clearly understands how to help her team and is never not thinking outside of the box of, you know, shifting things between games of what works and what doesn't work. So I think she's just going to do that this year, I would imagine, especially with more eyes on her and more attention on her.
And Emily, how about you? Any players from the top 50 that you want to give some praise to?
Yeah, I'm going to give a little bit of a shout out to Janica Cuoco at Drexel. As a CAA alum, I think she's done a really great job putting the CAA on a little bit of a higher status within all the conferences. But, you know, she has double-digit saves constantly. She's kept Drexel in so many games, so many impressive games. You know, they play, for someone that has, you know, one of the top save percentages in the country in Division One, you know, they play top teams, and they're seeing a lot of shots. You know, they play Maryland, they play Penn, they play Navy. And then you have Stony Brook, which is now a big CAA Long Island rivalry with Hofstra. So that's where my CAA two cents come in as a Hofstra alum. But, you know, Drexel's playing a lot of phenomenal teams, and she's really stepped up and made a name for herself and helped make a name for, you know, the Dragons in Division One.
And what kind of play style is she? When you talk about the other goalies, just like Dolce shows up in big moments, and O'Grady, kind of that steady presence. Any other kind of descriptors that you would throw out there for Cuoco's game?
Yeah, she's super consistent. I would say, you know, she's a little bit taller, a little bit leaner than your average goalie. So she's very agile, very quick hands. And I think she just does a really great job about reading, you know, the offense and where the shot's coming from. So, you know, she's just very steady in cage. And I think the Drexel defense plays a very aggressive style that leaves her to be able to make those saves that, you know, they just have a lot of trust in her that they wouldn't be able to play as aggressive if, you know, they were so worried about, you know, protecting their goalie.
Totally. Well, a good spot to end on, you two. And thank you so much again for running through and breaking that all down with me. And hopefully you listeners learn a thing or two ahead of this season about some of the game's most elite players here. If we want, do we want to end on one or two things we're excited about this season, or should we end it there? What do you think, Alyssa?
You know, I'm excited that the Final Four is a joint venue between men and women. I think that's going to be awesome. So, The Final Four the past several years has been just, you know, I still go back to 2022, maybe, yeah, it was 22 at Hopkins, where like I just had, you know, the chills that I had for just like the level of competition, the games. Our game is in a great place right now, the competition, the skill, and just the more eyes, the more seats that get filled to watch and appreciate it, it's just the better. So hopefully people will be buying the full weekend pack and enjoying every game they can get their eyes on at Gillette this year.
Let's go. Yeah. Emily, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, Alyssa definitely took mine. That's at the top of the list. But I am excited to see how some of the new programs do this year. You have Charlotte, you know, Florida, Southern Florida.
USF. Yeah, you're right.
and you have, you know, URI. So there's a lot of, you know, newness going on that's really exciting. And, you know, you just love to see the women's lacrosse game growing.
Growth of the game, the road to May starts soon. Thank you so much, Alyssa and Emily, and thank you so much for listening, all you fans. If you like what you heard, leave a comment, share, and review, and
come back. If you don't do anything.
Correct, exactly. And come back for more Inside Lacrosse podcast. Thank you so much for listening.